Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
Yes, Andrew Little is here for his weekly catch-up. Today we're talking about a review of current hate speech laws in New Zealand, the fast-tracking of new gun legislation in Parliament this week, and finally, whether our threat level has any chance of decreasing in the coming weeks. How are you today?
I'm very well, thanks. It's very sunny in Wellington today, so it's very nice.
Oh, that's good. I think the temperature's getting a bit colder up here, which is starting to be a bit of a shock.
Yes, winter is on its way.
Yes.
This time of the year.
Firstly, this morning I wanted to talk about hate speech laws or what the potential changes might be. How do our laws currently protect against hate speech?
Well, there's two principal laws. One is the Human Rights Act, which, as you'd expect, has various prohibited grounds of discrimination. And then in relation to speech specifically, it has actually has an offence, which is inciting racial disharmony. But it's very much focused on forms of expression dealing with discriminating on the grounds of race, as opposed to other prohibited grounds of discrimination, such as religious faith or sexual identity or, you know, whatever else it is. So there's clearly a gap there. The other law is the Harmful Digital Communications Act, which has been in place now for 3 or 4 years. And it sets out a set of communication principles that people are expected to adhere to in their online communications. I think it actually sets a reasonably low bar in terms of people's ability to take action against something that causes them offence. But the question is whether the mechanism and that process is easily accessible and effective. So I'm very keen to review both of those laws, to see what the gaps are and to see, or to make sure that we have mechanisms that people can get access to easily if they want to take up an issue about forms of expression that kind of go over the top.
What do you think a reviewed or an updated law would actually look like?
Well, we've got the nub of it there with the offence about inciting racial disharmony. So it has to be harmful. It has to promote and encourage harm to others and a sense of marginalisation and discrimination. So I think the tricky thing in this whole area, and we will get it because the big challenge is how far do you go before you're encroaching on legitimate free speech? And the issue was always going to come down to a line drawing exercise. How do you define these things? How do you define what is something that somebody has said or written that is not just sort of I disagree with vehemently or causes me offence, but is so bad that it should be prevented from being published. And you do want to be very clear about where that line is. But we need to have a good debate, I think, certainly in light of the events of the 15th of March, about where that line actually is, because we may not have drawn it at the right place at this particular point.
Yes, and that's exactly where I was moving on to. How do you actually think we go about striking that balance, especially if this law is either going to be... I mean, I know the review is the thing that's being fast-tracked, not the law itself, but obviously you'd want to get this process underway quite quickly, I would think. How do you think we go about striking a balance?
And that is the challenge. I think that when you look at stuff, you can see stuff that you know is just absolutely, it's disgusting, it's indefensible. And I guess as somebody who kind of talks a lot about upholding and protecting freedom of speech, I have to say I've reflected quite a bit in the last few weeks and thought, actually, there's stuff I see that I have tolerated, but I look at it and say, I'm not prepared to defend it anymore. Why does anybody need to claim to have a right to say that stuff? And this is the very egregious anti-religious faith stuff, the anti forms of identification people have, and others kind of attacking that and delegitimizing it, and in effect dehumanizing people with those characteristics. And I'm kind of at the point where I say, actually, there's no claim to protect that. The whole principle of the protection of freedom of speech historically was always about protecting the right of those without power to speak against those with power. It was always about the weak versus the strong. and protecting the right of the weak, if you like, to say, to be critical of, to challenge, to provide an alternative to those with power. And that's the nub of the protection of freedom of speech. It is not a license to deride or dehumanise others and to make them, you know, feel uncomfortable in their own home type of thing. So we need, I mean, the best way we do this is, of course, we encourage a good, robust public debate. And if there is to be any change, then, you know, I think it's incumbent on us as the government to make sure that we promote and cause a very thoroughgoing public debate on it.
Moving on to the new gun legislation, a new law has been passed. A new law has passed its first reading this week. What's it setting out to do?
So this is basically banning assault rifles. So these are weapons that, even with a basic category of firearm license, you can purchase at a point where they're not semi-automatic, but by some very, very swift modifications, namely a bigger magazine, you can turn them into a semi-automatic weapon. And this relates to assault rifles. These are not designed for hunting, they are designed for killing people. And we've just said in Parliament, all but one MP have said, we just don't need this stuff. So we've defined what a military-style semi-automatic weapon is, and we're banning those types of weapons, some of the gear that goes with them that makes them semi-automatic. That leaves a huge array of firearms available for those who need them for hunting, need them for pest control on their farms or bushland. It's not a prohibition on firearms, it's a prohibition on a specific type of firearm that is not designed for civilian recreational use. They are killing machines designed for military use.
Now, I think that one MP you referred to who voted against it would argue that he is concerned about the process rather than about guns themselves, specifically about the speed at which this law could be coming into force. Why are you not concerned about that?
Yeah, that's like the MP we're talking about is David Seymour. He's actually an MP for whom I have immense respect. He's as the one MP of one particular party with a set of principles, and it is about, you know, it's gone veers towards the libertarian end, which is maximum freedom. I think he does have a view about gun control laws, but in any event, yeah, he is concerned about the speed with which the law change is being made. But I think this debate isn't new, and it's interesting seeing the number of former politicians who over the last 20 or 30 years have been responsible for this issue and have said they wish they'd actually got this done earlier. And it's not as if we haven't debated it before. It's not as if the issues aren't well known. And after the events of the 15th of March, it was pretty obvious that one thing that certainly made it easier for the shooter to do what he did was the ease of access to these military-style semi-automatic weapons. Would it have stopped him completely? Can't say that. But it might have significantly minimised the harm that was caused and the fatality. So it is pretty clear, there's a pretty broad consensus erupted that actually we don't need this stuff. And for those who are regular users of firearms for hunting or for other uses, they can still do that. These are not weapons that they typically have in their arsenal.
But are you at all concerned that you're not going to get an accurate picture of public opinion or the specific groups that may be affected if you basically rush these laws into force?
Look, even before Cabinet had agreed in principle to change the laws, there had been a fair amount of consultation with some of the main stakeholder groups, and that has continued. So Federated Farmers, for the farmers, a number of hunting and sport and recreational groups, for the hunters and indeed some of the big retailers. I mean, one of the big retailers, hunting and fishing, decided unilaterally they're just not going to sell the stuff anymore. They were on board very quickly. So there was a fair amount of consultation with those who would be directly affected. And the overwhelming view was, actually, we don't need this stuff. We had farmers calling us, and you know, most MPs have had people writing to them. Certainly in the early days, most people writing and saying, I'm a gun owner, we don't need these guns. That has changed in the last few days. We had more people writing in saying, we think, you know, we don't need this law or it shouldn't be rushed. But actually, it's pretty evident to me that there is a broad consensus that we should make this change.
Finally, on security, we're still at high terror alert, I believe. How long do we actually remain at that before there's any chance of it decreasing?
The security threat level is reviewed every day, and we knew, and international evidence tells us, that when you have an event like we had on the 15th of March, the two major risks are copycat events, so other right-wing extremists or people of the ilk of the shooter wanting to do the same or similar thing, and the other is retaliatory action, so those who are sympathetic to the Muslim community who are the most harmed by this wanting to take some sort of action. So there's a significant degree of alertness to the possibility of those two things. When it is judged that that has dissipated, then you'll start to see the security threat level coming down. We were told right at the outset that the maintaining a higher than usual security threat level can go for 4 to 6 weeks. We're into week three, I think. So look, let's just see how this plays out, but it is reviewed every day.
Minister, thank you so much for your time, as always.
Cheers, Stuart.
Thank you.
Talk to you next week.
Bye.
That was Labor MP Andrew Little. The Wire.